Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Sometimes the world looks like you ain't ever seen it before. Stuck behind never-ending windows, all you need is a door. Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remembering unusual times that can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Just ask, say the word, and I'll be there. Just ask, you know the greatest things in life all come in a pair. They say hindsight's 20/20, but that ain't far enough behind me. So if you want the sweetest honey, I think hindsight's 1990. There's no need to pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit
90
Shows Taught Me.
Shit 90 Shows Taught Me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Are you ready to slay another day? So are we. Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. I'm Jess Sterling. Here is my co-host, Sarah Humphrey. Sarah, how are you?
Jess, I am creepily clapping for you. Good job on your intro.
Thank you so much. That I guess that makes me the like inflatable tube guys in the straight jackets.
Just I can't. So fucking stupid.
I can't wait to talk about all of this. But of course, we're not alone. Here joining us to talk about the spookiest episode of the season, at least so far, is a really great gentleman, Todd. Todd, how are you?
I am great. I am here to let you all explore the eternal mystery that is my brain, as I love this episode with all of my heart.
Mm-hmm. I understand why. We're talking season 4, episode 10, Hush. This is a really bold episode. Like, it's very, the fact that they were like, we're going to make an episode 4 seasons in to our very famous show in which like all of our cast simply cannot speak. Mm-hmm. They can't use their voices. So we will be relying on musical cues essentially and hoping that they can mouth words in a way that the audience can read. I love that they made this leap. It's a really, really fun episode and I can't wait to talk about it. But of course, Todd, we have to know, why'd you pick this episode?
Because it is one of my favorite episodes of the series. Like, it is like one of my top 5 favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. Where exactly it ranks might change, but it's like 2 or 3. It's definitely up there. But it's
one of
my favorite episodes. I love it. Like I said, it's very inventive in how it handled the lack of dialogue. It's something that Joss Whedon did kind of a challenge to himself, because after like 3 seasons in TV, he felt like he was in a bit of a rut as a director, just doing like the usual thing of like, you know, over the shoulder shot, a composite shot, you know, just like, it was basically just like talking heads. And he's like, he wanted to do something that kind of made him force his way out of the talking heads thing. And so that was kind of like a big inspiration for why he wanted to do this. And a lot of people are like, you can't do this. Why are you wanting to do this? This is not going to work. And even he's like, I don't know if it's going to work, but I'm going to try. And I'm so glad he did, because that's the big reason why I love the episode, is because of the silent stuff. Like the way that they use the silence, the way that the actors had to adapt to it, and the way that they wrote so many good gags. There's like the scene where Giles is doing the exposition in the classroom with his overhead projector has like so many funny parts in it. Love
the boobies thing. Killed me, and I know it's like very juvenile. It very much worked for me. Like, it was so stupidly funny.
My favorite, besides of course a Buffy making the stabbing motion without the
without the stake. You know? Yeah.
That's funny. But also whenever Giles puts up the picture of Buffy and she's like, my hips. apparently Sarah Michelle Gellar suggested that joke after she saw the picture. She's like, why did it draw me so fat? I think Buffy would react to that.
Yeah, it's a really fun episode. I think your mileage may vary on, you know, if you like spooky things. Todd, I already told you this, but like when I originally sat down to watch the episode, I was like, it was late at night and very close to my bedtime. And I was like, oh, why not? I'll watch Buffy. I got to the creepy little girl singing the gentleman song and I turned it off and I said, this is for not super close to my bedtime. but Sarah, you're not super into spooky things. I think your mileage varies. Sometimes you like witchy things.
I like witchy. I watched all the American Horror Stories except for some of the shitty previous seasons. But yeah. I think I do. I don't reach for horror, but I don't hate it. I like thrillers. Love a murder. Yeah. I think that the first time that I watched this, I was like appropriately freaked out, like scared, mainly from the gentleman. And like I felt like the friends of the gentleman. What, Todd, do they have a name?
I believe they call them like the footmen.
The footman. I hated that. Like, it was so fucking creepy. And I was like, so I was very disturbed. Like, I just think that like the little floaties and like the stairs and the jump scares, it really did freak me out. But I watched it for a second time with Adam, who is now caught up to the fourth season, or only the fourth season. Mm-hmm. And he made me think that this was a comedy show. And I was cackling my ass off.
Well, because guys in the straitjackets are hilarious.
Yeah. What he called them was the, you know, the flying monkeys from
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, very adjacent to that. He created like a funny little voice for the gentleman. Like, so the second time that I watched this, I was cackling like my little butt off. But I do really like the episode. I think that it is innovative. It reminds me of like some film school experiment, but in a good way. That's not supposed to be insulting. I know that sometimes I say stuff and it sounds a little rude, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed kind of like the mechanics of it. And it did scare me. Like, it was spooky. I think that it was really kind of like a fun episode. And Todd, it's one of your favorites. And is it one of those like most popular episodes within the fandom? Like, is that one of the most, like, I said to Adam, I said, I think this is a very like renowned episode of Buffy.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Like, if you look at top 10 lists of Buffy episodes, it's going to crack the top 10. Mm-hmm. This like where it's going to land, but it will usually be like pretty high up there. It was very like, well publicized at the time as well. They kind of really advertised it as like a special event and all. They really hyped this episode up, and I think most people felt that it lived up to the hype because, you know, the content all, but also the gentlemen were so freaking creepy.
I'll admit
the footman take me out of a little bit. I think the thing that keeps this from being like a perfect episode TV for me is that the footmen are a little too goofy paired with the gentleman. I wish they had a slightly different
body movement,
so that, because they undercut the creepiness a little too much.
I don't know. Okay, because like the first time it really did add to the creepiness of it. It was very like, you know, it was very, it's just like those like weird movements. I'm kind of thinking about, what is it? The well, what is the well, the creepy well girl.
The ring. The grudge. Oh, the ring.
Well, you know how she like walks on the ceiling and it's like fucked. It's like absolutely fucked. it was kind of like that. Like when I first saw it the first time, I didn't even think that it was goofy. I was just like totally like, this is like really fucked. I'm very like scared and creeped out. It wasn't until Adam was like, this is the fucking stupidest thing that I've ever seen, where I kind of got taken out of it. And I'm like, yeah, like it is kind of goofy, but I and it is kind of stupid, but I don't know. Like, I don't think it like ruined it for me. But yeah, it was like definitely an experience.
Yeah. Well, let's set things up here, because we start off with Buffy having a dream where she's kissing Riley, like in class, then the room gets dark and we get like Buffy's prophecies, right? The continuation of Buffy having these like weird random prophecies. There's, it feels like The Shining, where like the creepy girl at the end of the hall singing about the gentleman coming, and they need seven people, and it's all this, it's so creepy. And Buffy tells Giles about it. They try to look into things, but it's like they can't really figure any information out from this until everyone goes to bed and they wake up and the entire town is silent. No one can speak. And thus begins like the incredibleness of this episode, with the score. Just like you can't help but notice the score even more, because literally no one is ever talking. But some of the gags right off the top, Todd, that killed me, were like Xander picking up the phone to call Buffy and Willow, and then like answering the phone as if anyone's going to be able to say anything to anyone. That did crack me up.
And both sides realizing about the same instant going, ugh. And then Spike giving Xander a look like, you moron. Mm. It was just like the icing on the cake there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but the music, Christoph Beck is the name of the composer. He did most of the music for the series, and you know, just props to him. I watched a little featurette about it today and had him talking about, yeah, Joss told me that he was going to be doing this, where it's like the music's gonna have to do the heavy lifting. He's like, why? You know, why are you doing this to me?
Oh, he didn't like
it. A lot of pressure.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of pressure, but also it's like really his time to shine. It's like, this is like, this can be your baby. It seems like this Christoph character has done a bit of everything, hasn't he? He's kind of a star.
Yeah, I think he's worked in a lot of stuff, but Buffy is the thing that I know him for the most. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the score in this is just fantastic. And so I just want to make sure to shout him out, because I think the episode doesn't work as well as it does without that music to help propel stuff along.
Definitely not. Like, the entire cast is working their butts off just to like get these messages, get these points across. But then of course you have to have the music kind of underlying everything and telling you how to feel in a certain respect, right? Like, tell me when I'm supposed to be scared because the gentlemen are being creepy. Tell me when I'm supposed to laugh, you know? And so where do we want to start in terms of characters? Because the cast is pretty split up in this episode. They're all kind of on their own paths. Maybe we should start with Buffy and Riley. I feel like maybe it makes sense there, because Sarah, to your point, we've talked a lot about this, about like, is Riley boring, right? Like, we had this whole debate.
Don't be mean. So has your opinion changed at all in the argument, is Riley boring? If you don't remember, I don't think that Riley is boring. I think that the fact that he, well, I think a lot of things, like the fact that he has like some sort of undercover intrigue to him, I think is really cool. I think he's really cute, actually. Like, and maybe this is just like my like secret blonde bias coming up, like when I kept saying that I thought that Dawson was hotter than Pacey, and everybody was like, are you okay? I'm like, no. But I think he's really cute. I think he's really interesting. I think that like they have interesting chemistry together. Of course, they're like, they get like very awkward, but I think it's part of that is that they have two big secrets, respective secrets that they can't share. So something like, I mean, like when, what did Buffy say? She said that, oh, like she has petroleum. I have to do like a petroleum project. Like, it's just, it's so silly and awkward, but I really like them together, and I really like him. And I think that the fact that when they were fighting together, I thought it was pretty awesome. And I think that part of Buffy's issue is that he was like too much of like of a nice guy, a boring, perceived boring guy. I think now that she knows that he has something more beneath the surface, I think that she's just going to like him even more.
Yeah. I mean, he's not the most boring option for Ruffy simply because he does have a secret and because they're both lying to one another for solid reasons, right? They're not lying to intentionally hurt one another or anything like that. It's just there are certain things they can't talk about with people that are in their inner circle. I think my biggest problem is that, like, I've seen Buffy have better chemistry with other people. And on top of that, I mean, I think she has way more chemistry with Spike.
You're just like, saying other people, you just mean Spike. And that's clearly going to be a season six thing. We don't have time for this right now.
What do you mean that's clear? We're in season four. Two seasons into the future, we're going to get Spuffy.
Yeah, I guarantee I would sell a kidney.
We're going to get Spuffy. That's not a question in my mind.
I know, but it's not a now thing. He's still like evil adjacent.
But you're asking me why I don't think that her and Riley don't have as much chemistry.
She just like be like, you know, like, you know, like a virgin, like, or like, you know,
she's
like,
definitely not a virgin.
No, I didn't mean that, but like she should just like be like waiting for Spike for two seasons.
No one is telling her to wait for Spike for two seasons. All I'm saying is that like I don't find Riley as entertaining, and I think part of it is because they can't tell each other everything. There's always going to feel like this like massive gulf between them, right? Like you can sense that they aren't getting as intimate or as close to one another because they're hiding things from one another. And on top of that, there's something about the fact, like, so he works for this like organization that is like very secret, literally underground on campus, like taking in vampires, putting chips in their head and making it so they can't attack people, right? I feel like on the surface that sounds like a really nice thing. But I'm just so skeptical, Todd. Like, I just feel like we're going to find out something extremely negative about this organization. I'm very skeptical of them. They feel far too much like the police for me. And I just like, I just can't, you know, like give me a vigilante all day, every day. But like, give me like an organized unit. And like, I don't really want to be a part of that. So maybe part of it is that as well, you know?
You're just rebelling against authority whenever Roddy shows up on screen, basically.
Yeah, like that part of it is that. And also, like, to Sarah's point, she's very pro blonde. I tend to not really care for mostly blonde men on television shows. I just think he's like kind of basic. And like, he's a part of this organization, which is the one interesting thing about him. But I would argue that, like, beyond that one thing, I don't find that much interesting about him, especially when, Todd, we get like, I love like a banter, like a back and forth, a little bit of antagonism dropped in to make things spicy. And they're just a little bit bland, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I will say I'm a Riley fan. I like Riley. Yeah, he's white bread, but I don't know. It works for me. I like the nice guy because he's very different from what she's been with before.
Yeah.
And it's a change of pace. It's her like trying something else out, a different type of relationship, getting away from the broody bad boy of Angel. And so we have a little bit of a different spin on the relationship. And I like the fact that we kind of have someone else for her to bounce off of. Yeah, they don't have the antagonism necessarily, but I do like their kind of dorky flirtatiousness, him offering her cheese, you know, all that type of stuff.
That was great. Best Riley moment.
Yeah. So I think that there is like potential there. It's a very different thing though. He's not going to have the dark and brooding dangerous vibe necessarily. There is some danger because he's in the military. And he has a secret and all, and you'll just have to see like now that they know each other's secrets, how is that going to change things now that he's not.
That could change my perception on him. Certainly. Yeah. Because there we leave this episode and I know Sarah was frustrated about this. So we're going to talk about it. But at the very end of the episode, they've now kind of, they know something is up with one another, right? They've encountered each other in the heat of combat. They know, they've seen each other work now.
Yeah.
So they have to have this conversation of, okay, let's spill our secrets. And maybe that brings them closer, Sarah. Like maybe next episode, I don't feel this gulf between them anymore. But tell me why you were so upset at the end of the episode where they say, okay, I guess we got to talk. And then the episode.
It was annoying because I was waiting for this conversation for like four episodes and I just wanted to have it now. And then, of course, the way that you and I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer is not, it's very much
as of the old days. Like, I couldn't, like, the average folk that's watching it in 2025 could hit next and see that conversation. But because I decided a year ago to fucking podcast about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I kind of ruined my life, I wasn't able to watch what happened next. And guess what? I'm not a cheater, and I didn't hit next because I could have. I could have watched next, but no, I have to be a noble person and I have to, like, you know, pay attention to the rules. So I didn't. And it was
life is so hard for you, Sarah. Truly, everyone just take a second and appreciate how difficult it is for Sarah not to hit play on the next episode.
I wanted to hit play. Like, I wanted to see what happened. I wanted the conversation. I was very, you know, excited about them finding out about each other. I thought that like I said earlier, I think that the fight that they had together, I thought that they're like, you know, their fighting chemistry was really cool. It was like, I don't know, when that couple from that superhero movie fought together, and it's like very cool to see them together. Right, Todd? That couple? You know what?
Yeah, that couple.
You know which one couple from what movie?
What? Todd knows what I'm talking about.
Todd has no freaking idea what you're talking about. There's 0% chance Todd knows what you're talking about. There's so many couples from so many movies.
Name one.
Anything.
Name one.
Well, let's see. Oh, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's exactly who I was talking about.
Definitely not who you were talking about.
That was exactly who I was talking about.
Okay. Well, yeah. We nailed it then,
and
I guess.
When they fight together, they are so cool. And I really like that. Don't be a hater, Jessica. Like, come on.
Well, I understand your frustration not being able to press play on the next episode. I mean, back in the day, I watched this live. And so I had to wait, you know, a week to be able to watch what happened after. But the way they ended kind of fits into the theme that Joss was trying to do with this entire episode, because the whole episode is about the failings of language. You know, we even start off with the professor saying, you know, we're talking about communication, talking about language. It's about the thoughts, experiences we don't have the words for. And the whole first part before everyone goes silent is like seeded with all these different scenes of people not being able to express themselves, like Xander not being able to tell Anya how he feels, Riley and Buffy having to lie to each other about what's going on, Giles wishing everyone would shut up as they're all arguing around him. Even the Wicca group, like the Wicca girls, like misusing the word empowered to describe her lemon cakes or whatever, was like very intentional by Joss to show people using the wrong words or misusing words. And Tara, like, starting to not being able to speak up because someone else is like kind of beating her down with their words. And when we are trying to use the words, sometimes we can't communicate effectively. But once the words are gone, everyone's on the same page. Everyone is starting to get along a little bit better. Riley and Buffy finally kiss because they don't let their babbling get in the way. They finally learn the truth about each other. But then they get their language back. And they suddenly have the words to communicate. And they find that they can't because they don't know what to say. And so it all kind of fits into like this grander thematic thing that Joss was going for in the episode.
Wow. All right. Well, it was a genius move and I take it all back. It was the best thing in TV history, I guess. And I'm sorry, I'm a brat. I know I'm a brat. Okay.
I mean, something can be like thematically sound and still be annoying. There are definitely things out there like, oh yeah, I see the themes. I just hate them. So I'm not going to like.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about next. I want to talk about kind of Spike and his journey with Giles and then Xander. I would love an entire episode dedicated to Spike and Giles roommates. Okay, like this is what is it? This is when we stop. It starts getting real, real world Sunnydale. Like that's all I want. Finding out that. Like Giles is so upset because Spike is eating all his food, even though he like only gets his nutrients and has to live off of blood. He likes to crumble Weedamix into the blood to give it some crunch. Giles sending Spike to live with Xander for a night simply so he can get some is like incredible. I'm here for it. Fully support you, Giles. You don't need Spike. Harshen the buzz when you need to get it in. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Todd, Is this woman flying from Britain to California to get some Giles dick? Like, is that what's happening?
I believe so. I believe that Olivia is still living in Britain. This is the second time we've seen her. Yeah. I think like the first time they kind of insinuated that, or that she like has traveled a long way to see him.
I think we can now officially confirm, Sarah, that Giles is incredible in bed. No one travels that far to have sex.
Unless that's your only option, I guess. But
she's good. She is a good-looking person.
Well, I'm not
like,
saying
that is not her only option.
I mean, I didn't say so. I think that they are very good sex buddies, orgasm pals. What are we calling them?
Orgasm friends.
Orgasm friends. So funny. Yeah. I mean, I remembered Olivia from. Mm-hmm. It was either the pilot. Or not the pilot. Wow.
The premiere first of the season?
Yeah, the premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remembered her. I was like, oh, look, that's Giles's fuck buddy, like coming back for, another little visit,
another go around,
little rendezvous. And I was excited to see her because I think that it's exciting to see Giles have a friend that's not 19 years old.
Friend.
A special friend.
The way Giles just ripped those glasses off when they started kissing, yeah. I was like, "My guy, Giles, what you doing over there?"
Are you more into Giles or are you more into Spike?
Oh, 1,000% Giles. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. I can't. The platinum blonde hair ruins everything.
I thought that you were like very high on Spike.
No, I'm high on Spuffy. Like, I feel like the chemistry between Spuffy is incredible.
Not Spike individually.
I am not like attracted to Spike. No.
Are you enjoying his character?
Yes.
Like the most.
Of anyone on the show? What do you mean? Or the most I've ever liked him? I feel like I love Sad Sack Spike, but now I'm also really coming to enjoy like displaced roommate Spike. I think he's very funny. I think his ability to get under everyone's skin is probably one of his best qualities. And I very much enjoy it, specifically when it's Xander, because I just find it to be extra funny. So I loved them getting to be roommates for an episode. Todd, this had to have tickled you. I feel like you have to be a big Spike fan.
Yeah, I like Spike. I really enjoyed like his like arguing with Xander about whether he's going to bite Xander or not. Like saying like, "I'm moist and delicious." Like, "Oh yeah, right. You're a nummy treat." You're a nummy treat.
I wrote that down in quotes. You're a nummy treat because it's just like ridiculous. It's a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah, no, Chipped Spike is great. So I liked him as a villain, okay, but this iteration of Spike is where I really started to love the character because, like I said, he's there. He's not really a good guy, but he can't really do the evil stuff right now either. So he's in this weird limbo of them keeping him around for reasons, but he's just there and getting on everyone's nerves, annoying Giles, annoying Xander, just kind of getting in the way and just being the guy who will, kind of like Anya, will speak truth in the way that kind of like will get under people's skins, but he's doing it purposefully while Anya's just kind of oblivious about the harm her words can cause. But he loves like needling people.
It's so silly because besides the fact that he is a main character of the show now and is in the opening credits, and like he has some information about the military folk, now that Buffy is going to know what the military people are, he is no longer needed for information, really. So in a way, it's like, what is Buffy and Giles's, like, why would they want to keep him around and not kill him?
Well, he does still have the chip implant. So, like, he still is valuable in terms of, like, being an asset or a resource in terms of, like, the experiment.
Do they know it's chip yet? I forget. Like, do they? Because I would assume that if we know it's a chip and we know that he.
Spike knows it's a chip, right? Well,
I don't know, because he said that the back of his head was sore. And he also is like, get like migraines. But don't you think that if he knew there was something literally implanted in his head, he'd be like, get this fucking thing out of me. He would, you know, I don't know, go to Harmony and be like, bite this thing out of me or something. Like, I feel like he would take more. I'm not quite sure if he knows exactly what it is. Like, he knows they did something to him, but also the other guy that was next to him was like, said something along the lines like, don't drink what they're giving you type of thing. So I'm not quite sure what he knows. Yeah. Unless, Todd, like, I obviously, you know, in the future and eventually he'll figure it out that he has a chip inside of him. But from your recollection, do you know if we know that he knows? Now this is just turning into a Friends episode. No. They know that he knows that she, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think at this point, no one's, they know that the army guys did something.
Something, but they don't know what it is. Like,
yeah, they don't know exactly what it is.
Yeah, so like, because I just know that like he would be like going to somebody, like, get this thing out of me. Like, he would take action. So I'm just saying that, like, why, like, he's a vicious killer. He's William the Bloody, right? Like, why isn't like Buffy and Giles just like killing him? Besides the fact that he literally is a main character of our show now.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that even if Buffy finds out Riley's involved and if he gives her every detail, which we don't even know if he will, but if he does, I still think having like a test subject or an example is still valuable to Buffy and Giles. But like, who knows what their threshold is, their limit is on how much Spike is too much Spike. Like, when will he wear their patience enough to where they're like, okay, we got to get rid of him.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, Spike has been a prisoner of Buffy and Giles and the whole crew for, I don't know, days/weeks now. How much information has he actually given up? That's the other thing, because every single time that I've seen him, he's talking about passions. He's like complaining about something. He's like demanding the telly. Like, I wonder if he's actually said like, these people were doing experiments on me.
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to give up a ton of information, because I still think he sees them as his enemy, right? Like, I think he'd bite them given the chance if he could. So I don't think he's given up that much information. This kind of feels like one of those things, Sarah, where we've talked about this in past seasons where like they lose focus of the main plot to do these like one-off episodes. So we're not going to get any new information because they want to save it for like, this is the full season story, you know, is the chip implant thing. So they're going to hit pause on that storyline so we could focus on the gentleman and the Riley and Buffy finding out about each other aspect rather than anything going on with Spike. And he's there, as we talked about last podcast, like the comedic relief guy, you know, he's great at that. That's what he's going to provide.
Yeah. So, both Anya and Spike being the comic relief guy, it's really enjoyable. And of course, like, Xander has his own comedy beats on his own, but as I've discussed, they're very different types of comedy. So I kind of feel like it has something for everybody. And I'm really enjoying like all the dynamics. It is like really funny to see like Xander and Spike being forced to spend a night together. How Xander woke up and like automatically blames Spike, like as in like his new magical powers out of nowhere is like taking away voices. It's like, no, he literally is like tied up to a chair. I don't think he has that ability.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
And then I want to talk about the Xander and Anya stuff next, because it kind of leads into that at the end as well. But Xander was being a little fuck towards my girl Anya.
Doesn't understand how to be a boyfriend. Like, mm-hmm. ultimately, at his core, he doesn't get it. Because, sure. Todd, Anya just goes to Xander and she says, you don't tell me how much you like me. Like, you don't, like, say nice things to me. Like, you don't call me your girlfriend. Like, you don't do any of these things. And I'm sick of it. And I want you to do that. And he's not good at it. And he, like, very much says, like, we don't have time to talk about it. Like, we'll talk about this later, essentially, which, again, like, well, you're not going to, because then everything gets silent and you can't. But do you think it's enough, Todd, that Xander, when Xander walks in and sees Spike with, like, the blood mustache and assumes he's bitten Anya, and he goes over and starts just beating the shit out of Spike, is that enough to prove, like, how much he cares about Anya?
I mean, your mileage may vary. For Anya, it is. For Anya, she sees it and she thinks, oh, yeah. You can see it, like, even before the Anya gesture, which, by the way, the network didn't want them to do, and Jocelyn pushed
you
back.
You need it. It's so funny. Are you kidding
me? It's hilarious, but also it's, you know, CW. You know,
losers.
So, but they won. They won. They got to put it in there. One of the, you know, more iconic things from this episode. But if you'll watch, like, whenever she hugs him after that, just, like, the look on her face is, like, the smile that you don't usually see from Anya. Just, like, the look of, like, joy on her face. Like, she's, yes, he's proving that he cares about me. He's willing to, you know, beat someone up to save me. He's willing to white knight for me.
Yeah.
Which, a little antiquated, but also, you know, we've said Anya's, like, thousands of years old, so.
Well, and he also does hug her after, too. Like, after he realizes that, like, Spike wasn't doing, he does, like, hug her in a way of, like, oh, my God, I thought you were, like, dead. So there is that. And, well, again, this tickled me. I thought it was hysterical. Like, I absolutely adored it. I do think if Xander wants to make any relationship work long term, like, not Anya, just literally anybody, he needs to learn how to tell someone that he cares about them, because doing things for them, like, obviously it depends on the person. Anya seemed very excited about this whole thing, but it's not going to work for everybody. Like, some people are going to need to hear, I care about you. You know, I would be upset if you were gone. I would be upset if you weren't with me. Like, some people need to hear that. But obviously this worked for me, because I'm the biggest lasagna fan out there. And I thought this was hilarious. The hand gesture killed me dead. I was done. I was cooked. I was gone. I loved it so much.
Yeah. I really like this too. It like, for me, like, just seeing, like, him kissing her and, like, that hug of, like, oh, I, like, thank goodness you're okay. And then the hand gesture, it went very quickly for me from, like, wanting to shed a tear from, like, oh, it's so cute, to laughing. And I really like it. I think Xander has an incredible ability of choosing women that I would literally ride or die for. It's like, oh, I like your girlfriend a whole lot. Like, you keep choosing people that I really, really like. And that maybe leads me to being very protective of these women, a la Cordelia, a la an Anya. So hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully he doesn't fuck up too much, because he's a 19-year-old dummy. But I really like these moments. And I do like that he... maybe in his mind, he needed something like that to show himself, I really care about her. Like, I really, really like her. I'm having potential feelings of love for her. Like, maybe he didn't realize that until he kind of saw that, like, she might be in trouble. She might be hurt. There might be something that, like, he might lose her.
Yeah, he's never been great at, like, the communication and, like, being serious about stuff, right? He always is laughing things off, putting in jokes where maybe people don't appreciate it. So it doesn't surprise me that we get this from Xander, but I was pleasantly surprised that, like, everything ended up being fine. Anya is just weird enough and quirky enough for Xander to, like, get away with some of this stuff. So it does end up working for them. And I do love them as a couple.
I didn't even complain about Anya's haircut.
I almost brought it up last episode, because that's where it first started, was the shorter hair. I personally don't mind it. It's of a time. It is of a time. There was a time and a place for that hairstyle. It doesn't bother me that much.
Todd, what do you think about her hairstyle?
I like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't mind a shorter haircut. So yeah, mm-hmm. I like Anya's hair here. One of the things about Xander is we know that he comes from like a kind of, you know, fractious home life. And so I think he probably comes from a household where they don't tell people that they love them and don't express their feelings. So I don't think he's had like a good example of a way to do that. And also, as much as I love Anya, and if you've listened to the podcast I did with Adam and Lindy over on Whirlwind, talking about my top 10 TV characters, she was my number one favorite TV character of all time. I love Anya, but she kind of like, you know, railroaded him into a relationship to a certain degree. She basically just,
and that's
like,
what we love about her, Todd.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
She goes after what she wants.
Exactly, but in a way that left him feeling kind of discombobulated, like, okay, remember how you were like a demon who wanted to kill all of us? You've like, you know, have mm-hmm. tortured and killed men, you know, for thousands of years. You know, it's a little bit to this 19-year-old kid to wrap his head around. So I can see it taking a little while for him to kind of realize his feelings for her and realize that he's not just there for the orgasms like she says at the beginning. Yeah. I'd say one of the reasons I didn't come on for Doppelgangland or The Wish last season was because I didn't think I could contain my Anya love. Mm-hmm. Like the first two Anya appearances, because those first two appearances, she's there, but you have no inkling that she's going to become like a major romantic interest for one of the main cast coming up. I'm like, I just don't know if I could contain myself talking about Anya and not just talking about how much I love her so much. Love her so much.
Do you have any idea if it was they hired Anya for that one episode for The Wish? They liked the actor, so they brought her on for a second episode. And then they really, really liked the actor, so then they were like, we're going to write her into the main storyline. Or was, do you think that this was always part of their intention?
I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like it probably is they like the actor, because that seems to happen a lot on this show. Like, they'll bring someone in for something like, oh, wow, we really like what they're bringing. Let's go ahead and see if we can develop anything further for them. I feel mm-hmm. that's really what happened here with Emma Caulfield. I think they really liked what she brought to Anya in her first couple of appearances, and then that gave them the idea to, oh, how can we use her more? And I'm not 100% sure that's the truth, but it feels true to me.
If that, I was asking because, like, in my soul, my heart, like, that's my inkling. Like, I just feel like they brought her in. She was really funny. She had like a good comedic timing. Like, let's get her involved more. How can we do that? Oh, like a connection. I mean, like, she's great. Like, I totally support her being your number one favorite character of all time. That list for me is going terribly, though. Like, I don't think I'm making major moves on my list, to be honest with you, but I'm working on it tirelessly. So, and when I'm finished, I'll send it over.
Well, speaking of characters, we have to talk about a new character that shows up this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm feeling real good about the prediction.
No, Jess, I don't really think so. Podcast. I don't think that they're gonna. I don't think
there's no chemistry between Willow and new Wicca girl Tara, who hold hands this episode and literally do magic together.
I think Willow seems pretty straight to me, dog. I don't know.
She seems pretty straight to me. So Willow is now in this Wicca group, and they're just a bunch of fakers. They're all a bunch of fakers. Posers. None of them are real witchers. They're all posers. They're all just like want to pretend.
They're like crystal witches. You know what I mean? They're like, I'm gonna go to my local crystal store and buy this rock because it's pretty. It's $70, but at least like if I put it in my window, it will quote unquote charge, and then like I can do some like fun shit with it.
Let me get my salt lamp, and that will just heal all my chakras, and that is the type of witches that Willow is hanging out with, and they're just stupid, and I hated them. And poor Willow just wants to do magic. She wants to have friends who do magic. And Tara seems like someone who wants to do magic, but everyone talks over her, doesn't let her speak.
She's
for
a quiet
minute.
Girl. She's a quiet girl.
She's a quiet girl.
Yeah.
And then we see she's seeking out Willow after everything goes down with the gentleman and the silencing, right? And she's getting chased. She's getting chased. But Willow's there to help her. And then they hold hands. And by the magic of them holding hands, they're able to move a huge vending machine and block a door. Okay. Incredible.
Yeah. This is my thought. just like Rat Amy, Tara is a real witch.
Because her mom was a witch.
Yes. That I know we are going. I know Willow by is like a wizard in like D&D world. Fake witch. I'm like putting my
So you're saying Tara is like a sorcerer. A la D&D because she is it is innate. Yes. She is born with it. Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline.
Yes.
But Willow.
Just like Rat Amy.
Also real blonde. Witches. Like Rat Amy. Although Rat Amy was brunette when she appeared recently. But
I don't know how Rat Amy got into the hair dye, but she did.
I think she got bored, truly. I feel like she's like, oh, she's just a rat. Like, if Willow or Buffy had, like, a random box of hair dye lying around.
You're saying that Willow and Buffy dyed Rat Amy's
hair.
No,
I'm saying Rat Amy was bored because she's sitting in a dorm room all day running on a wheel, but her brain is a witch brain, not a rat brain.
If so she gets bored. If her brain is a witch brain, then why can't she do it?
Because she doesn't have fingers. What do you mean? She doesn't have fingers. She doesn't have a voice.
No, but, like, these witches don't have, like magic wands. Like,
she still needs like access to like ingredients and stuff, you know. She can't concoct potions as a rat.
I don't know, because once again I feel like real witches a la Rat Amy and like Tara, they are non-verbal witches. They can just make shit happen, while Willow has to go to the magic shop for the 900th time, get the Eye of New, get like the dusty ass shit. Like, I don't know. It seems as though Miss Girl Willow. I mean, Willow's like a fucky ass witch.
To be fair, Witch Amy also had to buy things to use to cast the love spell and things like that.
Hate people who try hard. It feels like you're just like, nah, Willow sucks because she had to read books to learn how to be a witch, and the only people who should be doing magic are the people born with it. That doesn't
famously matter. Sarah hates reading, so
oh yeah, I don't read very often, but I don't know. Like, I just feel like, I don't know if it's just like what I've been like born with, but I just feel like I like my witches to be born with abilities. I don't like my witches to have to, like, you know, they just decide, because that means that one day I can just go like and decide one day that I'm going to be a witch. And,
yeah, wouldn't you rather that? I would much rather live in a world where you have the ability to like change your future, where you have the ability to impact what you want to learn, not just like I'm one of the lucky ones who was born with it, you know?
I mean, it's passed down by century and century. Like, it's a rich history of witches.
Which you can read about in a book.
you can't read it and become it. I don't know, Todd. Like,
I mean, so I think there's something to, like, being born with it. But also, I think some people might have an innate ability or a you know, to be able to learn to do it, and other people don't. So I don't think like anyone can necessarily just like read the stuff and be able to do it. Possibly, although we have seen people accidentally do spells.
Giles is able to do. Is he a witch? I'm just saying, if anybody can go to the magic shop, buy the ingredients, and read from a book, then it doesn't make it as special.
But they still have to study and learn how to do it. They're not just like, spell casting for dummies 101 and like getting some Eye of Newt and shit. Yeah. Like, it takes work. But can I make a prediction involving Tara and Rat Amy?
Yes, please do.
I think Tara is going to help Willow fix Rat Amy.
Wow. I love that, because it really does take a real witch to make stuff happen, a la Tara. Okay. Do I need to force myself to call her Tara? Does it sound normal when I say that?
What else would you call her? Her name is Tara.
Okay.
Tara?
Forget it. Forget about this. Okay. We don't have time for this. Okay. I really like this character. I'm really excited about it. She reminds me of somebody. And I don't know if it's like somebody. She kind of reminds me from somebody from The Craft. Like, one of the girls from The Craft. Like,
The Nev Campbell character a little bit in The Craft, I think.
Yeah. She's a vibe. Like, she's like that, like, silent deadly witch, you know? Like, she fits into that mold, I think. Because I felt that as well. I felt like she feels
familiar
to me.
Yeah.
But I think it's just that she's a specific, like, quiet, understated, but very powerful character is how I'm reading it, at least, especially when we know she says her mom was a witch and she calls Willow special, which little smile when she said that just like made my heart soar. Willow would love to be called special, and like that I feel like this truly made her day, because not only are there like definite vibes between her and Tara, but on top of that, to have someone who also does magic call you special, and like when you're very down on yourself, right, Todd? Like Willow is constantly down on herself about like, oh, I'm not as good of a spellcaster as I want to be. Like, I want to work on this, I want to work on that. And she gets down on herself. So I feel like getting some recognition from someone else in your field is huge. Oh,
Yeah, 1,000%. Because this episode's like, I just want to float something bigger than a pencil. And she doesn't believe that she has the ability to do that type of stuff. Willow has gained so much more confidence in herself since we first saw her, but she still does, like, deep down, that kind of, you know, shy, self-doubting nerd. And even though she's much more confident, she still hasn't completely self-actualized. But now she has someone who, with their powers combined, were able to move something a lot bigger than the pencil. And so, and with Tara saying, you're special, you're powerful, it definitely seems like it can open up the doorway for Willow to realize her potential, maybe get some more self-confidence. And
get
Tara, who is obviously, Tara feels much more like, even like more shy than season one Willow was. Like Tara is like even like more to that end of the spectrum. So maybe they can be good for each other. Here is where I'd like to tell a story to y'all.
Oh, I love stories.
So let's go throw our brains back to September of 2002.
Ooh, okay. Okay. I remember 2002. Yes. So
I had a friend from Oklahoma who's a massive Buffy fan. We used to work together, and she's someone who like, she like downloaded every song that appeared on the show and burned them into CDs for everybody back in the days of LimeWire and all of that type of stuff. She and I actually made a road trip to South by Southwest in Austin to see a band that appeared in, played at the Bronze in one episode of Buffy, in a future episode of Buffy. But she's also a big film person like me. Like, we would go to Oklahoma City sometimes to see independent films that weren't in the town that we lived in, you know. Well, she found out that Tara, Amber Benson, the actress that plays Tara, had a film that was going to be premiering at a film festival in Birmingham, Alabama, starring her. She wrote, directed, and starred in a film called Chance. And one of her co-stars was James Marsters, aka Spike.
Oh,
no shit.
Yeah. And there also is an actor named Andy Hallett, who y'all don't know, but he is like becomes a part of a recurring character on Angel in the future. He also, just a weird coincidence, is in the crowd, like during Buffy's dream in Hush, like the classroom full of people. He's in there. He like jostled a whole bunch of people he knew to fill up the classroom for that scene. And Andy Hallett is one of those people. So just kind of like a weird coincidence there. So anyway, so we decided to go to the Birmingham Film Festival, Sidewalk Film Festival, in September 2002 so that we could see this movie with Tara and Spike in it. So my friend drove down from Oklahoma. I was in Texas by this point in time. She drove down on the day that Joss Whedon's show Firefly debuted. Is the same
week. Oh, no shit.
Yeah. So so then we drove the next day straight through to Birmingham. It was like a long drive. We were like, okay, we haven't eaten anything for a while, but whenever we get there, we'll find something to eat. Well, the place that happened, the film festival, had like no food places anywhere around. And so, and I hadn't been feeling really well that day, but we're like, okay, her movie isn't until the next day, but we still wanted to like experience the film festival. And so there's a movie that my friend wanted to see. It was a documentary by Adrian Grenier of Entourage fame. Before Entourage, it was a documentary that he did about trying to find his birth father.
And kidding.
Yeah. And so she knew him from like that. What's that? The movie that he's in.
Drive Me Crazy.
Yeah. She knew him from Drive Me Crazy. Like, oh, Drive Me Crazy is doing this movie. So we went down to like watch this film. He was there to do a Q&A after the movie. And so the place they were doing is like this kind of little cafe, coffee shop, but there's no food there. But like had to like go downstairs, like kind of like a basement place. And we watched that movie. And then the next movie started up, and it was a movie about backyard wrestling. And they had this one person in the, it was like this kid who's had all these surgeries. They show pictures of his surgeries, and I'm watching it, and I get a little like lightheaded seeing the pictures of this stuff because I hadn't really eaten well. I wasn't feeling good. And next thing I know, I'm on the ground staring up at the ceiling. I have passed out and fallen off the stool I was sitting on. And my friends are me like, are you okay? So like, everything's coming from a tunnel. And I'm like, okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. And so she like helps me get up and we like walk upstairs outside and sit down these little benches outside this place where they're showing the theater. And I'm trying to like, you know, come back to myself. I'm like, my brain is like still in this weird space. I'm not in my right mind. And all of a sudden my friend is like poking me going, don't look, but look there. And not 5 feet away from us is Amber Benson talking to her friends about the movie that we were just watching. And she's trying to convince them that it was funny. It's like this other movie, American movie, which is, I had had the exact same thought while watching it. And so I'm sitting there, not in my right mind, 5 feet from Amber Benson. And she's just said the thing that I had thought about the movie. I burst into hysterical laughter because it's so surreal. And she turns to me and goes, it's funny, right? And I'm like, I'm like, oh yeah, no, it's funny, but then I passed out down there, and I'm not in my right mind. Like, so, oh, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I think I just didn't eat. I think it's gonna be fine. Oh, okay. And so then we're just kind of, and then because I wasn't in my right mind, as she turned around, I'm like, but Amber, I just want to say we love you. We're here to see your movie. We're really excited about tomorrow. And my friend is like mortified because you don't tell the celebrity you know the celebrity, you know. And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. And then she goes back to talk to her friends. And then so then my friend and I are both just sitting there, just kind of like, okay. And I'm still trying to like get myself back into like a normal state of mind. And my friend is still freaking out that we're that close to Amber Benson. And so Amber looks over to me like, do you think a mint would help? Would you feel better if you had a mint?
Oh, she got a mint from her.
Yeah, and her friend's like, ooh, Amber the Altoids pusher. Push it to Altoids, everybody. And Amber's like, stop it. It's like, would you like an Altoid? I'm like, yeah, sure. And so I took an Altoid, ate an Altoid. And she's like, one of my friends,
the
like,
best Altoid you've ever had, Todd.
She turned to my friend Crystal's like, would you like one? And Crystal's like, yeah. And she takes the Altoid as well. Crystal has said that's the pity mint, that she got the pity mint. I maintain as the one who passed out, I actually got the pity mint.
They're both pity mints. Let's be honest.
So anyway, so we sit there for a little bit longer, and then I'm like, okay, I think I'm feeling good enough. I kind of want to go back to the hotel. And my friend's like, okay, let's go back to the hotel. And then we went back to the hotel. The next day, we showed up early to stand in line for the theater where they were showing her movie. And there was like a big, like, we got there early. There were still like a, like, 10 to 15 people in line ahead of us. Everyone's showing up to see this movie with Buffy people. There are a bunch of girls. I can't remember where they drove from, but they had t-shirts made up that said Amber Bama. And they were like,
oh, wow.
Like a group of friends. They had a video camera. They were interviewing everybody about why they were there. And so I told them the story. Like, did you eat the mint? I'm like, of course I ate the mint. Amber gives you a mint. You eat the mint. I'm going to hold on as like a souvenir.
the best mint that you ever had.
I think so. I think it may have been. But yeah,
I mean,
but
that was my... that hungry and it just passed out. I'm sure it was delicious.
Whenever you have Altoids, ever since then, do you think of her?
Yeah, I do. I honestly. I don't have them very often, but every time Altoid, it does remind me of the time Amber Benson gave me a mint.
Was the movie
that
good?
Is my brush with Buffy.
That's cool.
Star, yeah.
Was her movie good that you went to see?
Yeah, I liked it. It's one that is really hard to get a hold of now. Yeah. It's really hard to track down. Like, it was on DVD, and I'm beating myself up for not buying it on DVD when it first came out, because now it's like super expensive because it wasn't out there very long. For a while it was on some streaming services. Now I don't think it is. Because I haven't rewatched it since that time. And I've thought about it, and I'd like to rewatch it to see how I enjoy it now that's not part of this big experience.
Yeah,
You know, I have all these emotions tied up with it because of that.
Yeah.
So I was happy to finally come on here and talk about my Buffy
cast experience. That's really exciting.
Because she finally joined the cast in this episode. So
yeah, I'm really excited to know more about her character and obviously hear her speak more. but because I think it's going to be nice for Willow to have another witch who can, because obviously like she has friends with, you know, powers and stuff, but I think it's a little different to have someone that you can bounce off of in terms of, you know, learning this sort of stuff, especially yeah. Sarah, to your point, if her mom is a witch, like she grew up around it. So I assume she's fairly knowledgeable in a lot of stuff that maybe Willow isn't familiar with. So I think it's going to be great. I'm very excited, and not just because I predicted that the next person Willow would date would be a woman witch. So I
don't know how you predicted that, Jess.
I don't either. I promise everyone I'm not spoiled. I really do promise, because no. I've somehow avoided Buffy spoilers. I feel like,
yeah.
Well, there's one thing that I was spoiled on, but that's Angel stuff, and we'll talk about yeah. that.
It's pretty incredible that you called that so early.
Mm-hmm. So early. I called it last episode. What do you mean so early?
I don't know.
Okay. So we do need to talk about the gentlemen in terms of just them and their presence and like what they're here to do, right? Because after they silence the whole town, they need to cut out the hearts of people. And the reason they silence everyone is so that they can't scream. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's going to defeat them is a human voice that screams to kill them. And them just like hovering around town with their like inflatable straitjacket men was kind of everything. I think Todd, my favorite though, is when they just do their little clap. Yeah. They like their hands are up so high and it's like a golf clap. It's incredible.
Yeah. So the gentlemen are played primarily by mimes. They hired a bunch of mimes to play most of the gentlemen.
Okay, it's so much creepier now. Oh, yeah. It's so much creepier now. But yeah. It's like, that's good. That's a good idea. But that's yeah. so creepy.
Yeah. And Joss Whedon has said that he's like, I made like 40% less jokes about mimes after this because they like brought so much to the characters. But
they were very good. Yeah.
But the two primary gentlemen, the ones that you see kind of the most, they were like creature actors. They've been lots of stuff in like my makeup. The main one, like the tall one, is an actor named Doug Jones. And I don't know if that name means anything to either of you.
It sounds familiar, Doug Jones.
So he has been in a ton of things. Most notably, I think the two things that people would know him the most from, most people would know him from, and he was Billy Butcherson in Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus, yeah.
And he was the Baron in What We Do in the Shadows. Those like the two things where you actually get to see his actual face and not all the makeup all the time.
Yes, the Baron. Yeah, I love the Baron in What We Do in the Shadows. Yes, yeah. Yes.
But other than that, like he was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies. He was the Fish Man in Shape of Water. He was mm-hmm. the Fawn and the Pale Man in Pan's Labyrinth. He was a main character on Star Trek Discovery as Saru. He was in Jonathan Pinner's film, The Bible. Bye Man. He was the Bye Bye Man and the Bye Bye Man. So he's incredible. Been in like tons and tons and tons of stuff. I love Doug Jones. He's like really talented, but he's like doing this sort of thing for years. But yeah, he's the main gentleman, the big one, like the tall one that does like most of the important stuff. He's like the lead gentleman. So I just had to mm-hmm. shout him out because like he's one of the people you just like see and go, oh, him. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sarah, what did you think about this for a villain having to collect 7 hearts from people nearby and silencing them so no one can hear them scream?
I mean, like it was cursed and I wanted to burn it with fire, but so they said that it was from a fairy tale.
Right.
Is it actually like, do we know what fairy? It kind of reminds me of the Hansel and Gretel thing. Like sometimes we pull those references, but I don't know if I know this fairy tale.
No, this is pretty much taken just from Joss's imagination. He says like, ooh. Well, the scene of like the gentleman floating in towards the guy in the bed before they take his heart was something that Joss dreamed about once.
Ooh.
I can't remember but he like mentioned like there's several different reference points that he used and kind of pulled together mm-hmm. to make the gentleman, but he kind of wanted to do like a fairy tale type yeah. thing. He kind of wanted to do that sort of thing because they don't usually do that. They usually have like much more like reptile monsters or more demonic stuff. And they wanted to kind of do something that was a little bit different for this.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked the concept. It was so creepy. And yeah, I like the seven hearts thing. The only thing, like, you know, not to poke holes, but like, okay, so it was only Sunnydale that lost their voices. Why can't we just like shoot an email to like a buddy in a different town and be like, hey, come over and can you just like scream for like 10 minutes, please? Like, why couldn't we do that? Like, this whole thing could have been wrapped up in like 5 minutes.
Well, there's no telling if the spell is like, it could be like a silent spell in D&D where it's like an area effect and anyone that comes in might have lost their voice. We don't know for sure how that works.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thought it was great. Like it was very creepy. The Seven Hearts thing. I think that the little box thing, like the fact that Buffy was able to prophesize it, it's the one time that like prophecies actually helped her out because she knew that like that's where the voices went. Therefore, she has to destroy the voice. The box rather when she saw it. So I thought that it was like, it was really cool. And I thought, I think like another thing that like really, how do you think that they did the floaties? Cause I thought that the floaties looked pretty good.
So the floaties were a combination of like the shots where you can't see their feet. They're just kind of like gliding forward. They're standing on dollies. But the times you can see their feet, they're actually on wires. They actually have a crane with wires on them. The gentlemen are just kind of be like, you know, dragged along and pulled along by wires that then got like removed in post.
Wow. That's just like Elphaba. They were defying gravity.
Jesus. The one thing that I was like, this is a bit too far is when Riley does break the box and Buffy's able to scream, the gentleman's heads full on explode.
Oh my God.
And there's like just like literally kind of looks like slime from like Nickelodeon. It was like this lime green gunk. That was a little much, Todd, in terms of like, it felt more like cheesy or what's the word we use sometimes? So when people were saying like Buffy is camp, like it felt more camp than like, because this is like a truly like horror episode. And it felt, you know what I mean? Like it was like too lime green for me, I think. But I got it. It was fine. I don't mind heads exploding.
I'm trying to find my reaction to it because I was like, oh my God, ew, this is, I think I was like, Gross Town USA or something. I can't find where I wrote it, but I was like, this is so disgusting. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Barf Town. Ew, ew, ah, ew. And then I said, okay, Tara is a real witch, like Rat Amy and her mom. And then I said, I hate this show. And that was referring to the credits. And I was like, I'm very grumpy about this. So yeah, I did not like the goop. The goop was so yucky, so gross.
It was a bit much, I think.
I loved it. Just
well, you watch a lot of horror, Todd. So that doesn't surprise me.
It kind of reminded me, Todd, does it remind you of... what is that alien movie, but the creepy one with the big eyes? Damn it. That's all alien movies. Alien movie. Mars Attacks.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't something gross happen in there, like with a goop? Yeah.
Their heads start exploding and they play the one song. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my God. Look, that was a deep cut. I haven't seen that movie in a billion years.
Me either. I've only seen it once when it first came out, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, creepy alien, big eyes. He's right there. I said, I'm looking at him. He's horrible. I hate that guy.
Oh man.
I did think they were effective monsters. And in terms of a monster of the week, this is like, in my opinion, one of the best monster of the week episodes, because it's like we start it, we finish it all in one episode. We wrap it up. They're creepy. They're horrifying. It was easy enough to follow. Like, I loved Giles' overhead projector presentation. I'm like, did you draw those, Giles? Look at you. Look at you. You're such an artist. Maybe it was his booty call that drew them, because she also drew the face of the creepy monster guy that she saw.
I think the art that Olivia did was much better than the art in the slideshow presentation.
Listen, art is subjective, Todd, and I appreciated Giles's art, especially when it's like he has all the blood and then they're like, wait, what? And then he had like even more blood on the next one.
Was like the funniest thing, because it was just like, I mean, it was like, he used so many of those clear plastics. Like,
yes, this,
once again, could have been an email. Like, we could have.
It's the show. It's the showmanship, you know. It's,
oh, and then Anya eating popcorn in the background.
Incredible.
Yeah. So
the unbothered queen. Unbothered queen. I love her.
Bellissima. Like, just once again, the comedic timing of Emma Caulfield.
Yes.
Nice. I guess who's learning? So good. So good.
So impressive.
I know. I can name so many of the actors' names. So many.
Wow. Yeah. We don't need to do that. But
Nicholas Brandon. Oh, I named one.
So happy for you.
What's his friend's name? Other Brandon.
It doesn't matter. He's not even on the show.
He could be. You want to place bets? Like,
oh, we're definitely getting a Xander twin thing.
Yeah, it's gonna be his actual twin.
Yeah.
What happens if his twin is hotter?
Oh my god. We're an hour into this. I'm not opening this discussion right now.
Why? Where do you got me? Where do you got me?
Identical twins. What do you mean? What happens if one is hotter?
Oh, you don't think that there's always one hotter twin when there's identical
personality twins? Wise? Yes. Physical appearance wise? No.
No. One has always has a funky eye. Frickin' tooth.
A funky eye.
Yeah.
What identical twins are you hanging out with? Or what? Does one eye look in a different direction?
There's always one ugly twin. Remember Thickums from Big Brother?
They're both blonde bombshells. Neither one of them are ugly. What are we doing here? Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Todd, anything else you want to say about this Buffy episode before we get into Cordy's Corner?
So one of my favorite moments that we haven't really talked about is whenever Riley and Buffy are fighting the Gentleman and the Footman. And first of all, you have whenever she swings and kicks on the Footman and flies across the room, you see a look on Riley's face like, holy shit. It's like, she's strong. This is not just some normal girl. So that moment happens and that's fun. But my favorite thing is whenever she gets his attention and points towards the box. He goes up, takes it and smashes on the jars. Looks at this little happy, I did it face. And she's like, ugh. It's like the little kind of puppy dog looking for approval face. That he shoots her. It's just so adorable. I love it. I love it so much.
It's so cute. But then she was like, the box. And then he got the box.
Yeah.
And then she was able to scream. Bad scream. She's not a very good scream.
It wasn't a very good scream. I also felt the same way. Not high-pitched enough.
It wasn't her screaming. They had someone else's voice, but they looped it to make it go really, really long. But it wasn't
Why didn't they just have her scream?
Geller can't scream for
she is a stunt actress for her screams.
Because she screamed on set, but for whatever reason, they in post they got something else and looped it. I don't know why. It's just I watched the DVD commentary earlier today as well as the featurette, so that's where I got that little bit of
bad scream. They should have just used her scream. I'm sure it would have been better. It would be like, okay, Sarah Michelle Gellar, your scream when you actually filmed it wasn't that great. Drink some water and scream longer. She's an actress; she could do it.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to mention is that, because Jess, you talked a bit about how the actors are giving their all, trying to sell, the silent stuff, but they had to do lots of work to get to that point.
I'm sure.
Because Joss said the scene where they're all in Giles's apartment together for the first time after lost their voices. So the first time they went through it, it was done 15 seconds because they're just all doing that. Because they have a vocal cue or a sound cue they're waiting for. And this time they kind of had to work out, okay, I have to wait and have to let the other people do their thing before I do my thing. And it took a bit of work for them to get to that point. But once they kind of got it, figured out, they nailed it. But it was a pretty steep learning curve on how to do this, because it's not generally in an actor's wheelhouse to do the silent acting.
Yeah, you have to overact to really get your point across almost. This was a really fun episode, but let's shift gears. We have to talk about Cordy's Corner, season 1, episode 10 of Angel, Parting Gifts. And as expected, Sarah, as you predicted last podcast, Doyle has passed his visions onto Cordy. Now she's getting visions. She hates it. This wasn't even the most surprising thing about the episode, Sarah, because even though both of us knew that we would be seeing Wesley return because the Plex, there's graphics, it spoils it. Yeah. I had no idea he was coming back this episode, and I certainly didn't expect him to be wearing an all leather ensemble.
Wesley, I think that it was truly a star this episode. I thought that he was really, really funny. I thought that just the fact that he's like, yeah, like I have this like cool job now. He's like really trying to sell other people, but also himself, of this like new vigilante. What was he?
Rogue demon hunter.
Yeah. Like he really had to like try to convince himself of that. And then I just thought that like his lines throughout the episode were really funny. And yeah, like, you know, he's dweeby, but like they're kind of like leaning into it. And I thought it was really nice seeing Wesley back on the TV screen. I thought that he added like a funny dynamic. I definitely think that Cordelia and Angel need a third for a trio. So I was excited, and yeah, like definitely the leather was a surprise, but it's just funny. Mm-hmm. It's like when you go off to like college, it's like, you know what? I don't have to be that loser that I was in high school. I could be whoever I want to be. I could be the cool person. I'm going to go wear a leather jacket. I'm a whole new person. It was kind of like,
yeah,
that.
But he wasn't expecting the chafing. And so that's why I think he ultimately does return to his normal style by the end of the episode. Cause you know, I did love the callback when Cordelia is trying to kiss just everyone she sees, basically, to get rid of these visions, and she wants to pass them on to somebody else. And so, of course, she kisses Wesley, and he's like, well, went better than last time. And it was like, very low bar, Wesley.
Yeah.
Extremely low bar. It was on the floor.
Hard to do worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was not a fan of Wesley on Buffy. Back in the day, like when it was first airing, I did not really care for the character. The only Wesley scene I liked was the Cordy kiss, because it was so awful, and it just kind of vindicated all the thoughts I had about him, about how awful of a character he was. So when this happened in the original airing, I was so upset that Wesley was suddenly going to be a member of the cast, because I liked Doyle, and now Doyle was gone, and now we got doofy Wesley, who, even though he shows up in the leather acting like he's competent, he's still incompetent. He can't even get his dagger out of his like ankle sheath to do anything, and he's falling all over himself and has to be rescued by Cordy. And I'm just like, oh, they're going to bring this doofus in. And now on my rewatches, I've grown to appreciate Wesley more for what he is, you know, on Buffy. And so I didn't have that reaction on this watch, but I can still remember. It's like one of the like very clear memories I have of watching these shows the first time was just how annoyed I was at the thought that Wesley was now going to probably be a main cast member of the show. And it was just like, no, why? Doyle was so cool.
That is so funny. I can understand that reaction. I think I never really minded Wesley. And I the comedic bits of him this episode, I really enjoyed. So I'm going to find it interesting to see how he's integrated into the group, because he's certainly different than Doyle. Much less cool, I would say. So we'll see how he fits into things. But overall, I did like the episode of Angel. I liked the, like, you know, the trickiness of like, oh, you think it's one guy and then it turns out it's the other guy. And of course, Cordelia is literally always the one in trouble. This poor girl, give her a break and a raise. Truly, like, what is happening? Cordelia is always the one in danger. Yeah, I also like how she, you know, she spent a lot of the episode being like very annoyed that Doyle gave her this burden that she sees it as. And then by the end of the episode, she's like, I mean, she's really struggling with her grief over the loss of Doyle. And I appreciated that we got that from Cordy, because it would have been upsetting if like they glossed over it. It really felt like it was meaningful to her. And I loved her like flattening out her little drawing and like framing it and being like, oh, this is a memory of Doyle, especially because, Sarah, the bit that did kind of kill me is her being like, this was Doyle's favorite mug. And Angel's like, he didn't have a favorite mug.
But wouldn't it be nice if he did?
Yeah, I thought that was so funny and like just true to who Cordelia is.
Yeah, you know? I really enjoyed the Cordelia scenes. I was like a little frustrated with her. Like, she was so angry about the abilities, because it's like so cool. It's like, hey, like, think this is cool, because it is cool, but it is a burden. It's definitely a burden. And I do miss Doyle. It does bum me out knowing that because of something outside of the show, like something going on, demons that he had in real life, like he couldn't continue, but mm-hmm. it does bum me out. But you know, like it's as okay as it's going to be. And then yeah, I thought I really liked the auction. I thought that was really funny mm-hmm. and interesting. And I really did like the twist a lot too, because I really wasn't expecting it. Like I guess like it makes sense, but it was like a double fake out, which I thought was pretty cool.
Well, I also think it was because we were already being distracted by like, oh my God, Cordy has these new powers. Oh my God, wait, Wesley is the guy in the leather outfit? And what is he doing here? And now we have this other guy and Doyle's still gone. So I think we were so distracted by everything else going on that they were able to like sneak in that twist.
Yeah. I liked Barney when I was watching it. I was like, oh, like I like that he's able to like read emotions. I thought that was a really interesting superpower, or like demon power. I don't know. I like that he was able to kind of read people like that. So I don't know. I liked him, and I liked how he was like connecting with Cordelia until like he wasn't connecting with Cordelia. Then he was being kind of mean. But yeah, I thought it was a really good episode. I really enjoyed like the twists. It was fun seeing Wesley back. I thought that when Wesley was like trying to say goodbye, but he was really just asking for people to ask him to stay, I thought that was really funny and really, really great. So mm-hmm. yeah, I thought it was a good episode of Angel.
Yeah, I love after they invite him to sit down that he goes from just kind of like, oh, wish someone would invite me, to like, you said there's toast? And like just being like, yeah. He's like, all toast. Right, I'm invited now. And now I'm just so like going to like ask for everything.
An interesting lore that like Angel's a good cook, even though he doesn't eat. It's like, who knew?
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. That's an interesting addition there. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things in the episode is Cordy's audition. Because first she starts crying because she has all this emotion with Doyle, and they're like, that was an interesting choice, but what do you think? Happy the stain skull? You know? And then of course we're having the attack in the middle of it. Yeah, I thought that was like a really funny sequence. And yeah, I thought that, you know, the bad guy was like a really interesting, fun villain, you know, when mm-hmm. his heel turn and like turning on Cordy and like using his empathic powers for evil instead of good, trying to make her doubt herself. I thought that was all really well done. Cordy like trying to up people at her auction because she's offended that they're not going to spend more money on her is the most Cordelia thing ever.
Yeah, it was great. They're going to remove her eyeballs because she's a seer.
And I just wanted to see if y'all are tracking this. Like the person who won the auction is a lawyer for Wolfram and Hart. And we've seen Wolfram and Hart multiple times this season.
Oh, Wolfram and Hart of the season of Angel or
the season of Angel. Yeah, they're the law. So they're the ones that hired the guy during the police episode. They're the law firm that got the guy to go in and put the hoodoo on the police.
Oh.
In the episode where Angel kicks a guy out of an office and the lawyer's like in his face. That's a lawyer from Wolfram and Hart.
There are multiple times
where Wolfram and Hart are like kind of the lawyers who are there whenever things are going kind of weird with supernatural stuff, and they're aware of what's going on with supernatural stuff. So you guys hadn't really mentioned this so far, and so I just wanted to just bring it up to say it's something to maybe keep an eye out from whenever you hear the words Wolfram and Hart, because they are popping up in multiple episodes. And this episode, like after she gets done, you know, after Angel shows up, the lawyer's walking away, she's on the phone saying, nope, we lost it. Guess who? So they're very aware mm-hmm. that Angel is there interfering in their work. So
interesting.
Something to be aware of.
We'll track that going forward. We did get some feedback. So I do have a little bit of feedback from last week's episodes as well as this week's. I think, I'm trying to remember, we may have recorded early, which would explain why we didn't get this feedback in time. Linda had emailed us in and about the episode Hero of Angel. Obviously, the last episode where we lose Doyle. And she's like, completely devastated. Are we noticing a trend yet? Getting our hopes up that our favorite couples will be happy, and then them playing the Uno reverse card and staking us to the hearts. Giles and Jenny, anyone? Also, if Angel could stop snapping my favorite characters' necks, that would be great. Too soon, bro. Too soon. And while we are on the subject of the million reasons I hate Angel, you know what would have come in real handy right now? Maybe some kind of gem that could make Angel immortal. I will never forgive him for smashing the gem of Amara. Also, him restarting the day, causing Doyle and Cordy to lose one of their last days together. He is the absolute worst.
I mean, in Angel's defense, he didn't know it was one of their last days together, so I can't really blame him for that.
No, but we just hate him on principle, Todd. And then Linda also brought up, as you were mentioning earlier, Sarah, the actor Glenn's like real life struggles with alcohol and heroin addiction, which is what caused him to be written off the show because they were like struggling to film with him so deep into his addictions. The hope was that writing him out, he could go get the help he needed and maybe return someday. I've always felt that this line was Tim Minear trying to reach out to Glenn. Like you need to change things. This life isn't working for you. Heartbreakingly, we lost Glenn to a heroin overdose in 2002. He was only 32 years old. Angel season one will always hold a special place in my heart. Glenn was one of my favorite actors, and Doyle is my favorite character he played. I wish we could have had more time with Doyle, and even more so, I wish Glenn had more time in this world. So thank you, Linda, for not only, I mean, obviously Linda really loves this episode, and it's like, I think I was like really devastated by losing Doyle. I was not expecting it at all. I don't know if that was like the general consensus at the time when the show was on. I was like gobsmacked. I was not expecting it at all.
Yeah, from what I recall, I was gobsmacked as well. Don't remember it being a thing that I knew was going to happen. And like I said, Wesley coming in as a replacement was like, no, wait, where's Doyle? I think it was like a big shock to a lot of people.
No. We also got an email from Joy about Something Blue and Hero. And she mentions, I love Bangel, always will, but I also really love Spike and Buffy. There's something about them that is more equal? I can't say much without spoiling, but their dynamic is always evolving. This is the first glimpse we get of the possibility of Spuffy and their chemistry. See? Thank you, Joy. I appreciate you. And also, I need to ask Todd, were you Spuffy or Ducky? What was the other one?
They were ducks. Bangel is what a
Right. Wait, who are the ducks again?
The ducks apparently were Bangel fans because of a Bangel fan fiction was written by someone whose username was Duck or something like that.
Okay. So were you a Spuffy or were you a duck?
I'm a Ruffy. I'm a Riley Buffy guy.
Oh, he's a Ruffy. Okay, that nickname is very cute, though.
I don't know if that's actually the name, but that's the only thing I can think of.
No, so. We have an email that I'm going to get to that does reference Ruffy. Joy also continues, Willow in pain breaks my heart. I don't have a comparison since I married my first boyfriend. Wild, I know. But I've had my fair share of different kinds of heartbreak, and her portrayal of the devastation is so well done, even if she's also pretty whiny and needy. I also love that of all people, Spike is the one who can see right through things and can tell that Willow is barely hanging on. The running gag of him watching Passions is great, and this isn't the last time we'll hear about it. The only parts of this episode I feel meh about is Riley. He's just not my cup of tea. In Cordy's corner, we have a second heartbreaking episode after y'all were saying how much you were liking Doyle. It's so crazy that we got two hilarious episodes from Buffy and two extremely sad episodes from Angel. I like that he told Doyle, who then told Cordelia about what happened with Buffy. He's broody, but he's opening up a bit. And so it's an angel with a bit of growth. I love the moment between Cordelia and Doyle where he's about to tell her he's part demon, but gets interrupted with a vision and she covers for him. It's amazing and unfortunate how relevant demon Nazis like the Scourge still are after 20 years. I like that Cordelia is only upset that Doyle kept his demon half from her, not that he had a demon half. I'm okay with what happens after when it comes to Cordelia and romance, but her and Doyle is one of those relationships that I really wish I could have seen. And here we come to Doyle's moment of being tested. He was the promised one all along, and he rose to the challenge, a true hero. If I Will Remember You makes me cry because of Buffy and Angel and their relationship, Hero makes me cry because of Doyle and his strength of character. He had so much potential and he was gone too soon. And his final moments, both his sacrifice and his final words being, is that it? Am I done? Just gut me. Every time. And again, while I'm okay with the direction the show takes after this, I wish we could have seen more Doyle. Totally agree. I like I understand like real life stuff like happens, right? And like gets in the way of television and like, you know, it's really unfortunate. But I was really enjoying Doyle. I do think like ultimately Cordy having these visions is going to be really fun and really great for her character. So I'm happy about that aspect of it. But yeah, Doyle was like really great. And I feel like we were really building to something that could have been really fun with him and Cordy, but alas. We also got a message from Chris H, who is the lovely listener who sent in the episodes that we're supposed to watch of Angel, which I did notice. Episode 11 is not on this list, which I'll watch it anyway, but it's not on the list, just to let you all know. Okay. Hush is one of Chris's favorite episodes in the whole series. Firstly, we recognize this innocence in Riley and Buffy. Oh, he had a question mark. Is it Riffy's? So it's either Riffy. I think Ruffy's is better though. Ruffy. I think Ruffy is a better ship name than Riffy. Relationship. They're like two little kid souls meeting one another for the first time. We also get to see some of the best of Lasagna. Anya's line, "Oh, an orgasm friend," kills me every time. Plus her little hand motion to Xander when they lose their voices. Iconic. Of course, we meet Tara, who is just a heartwarming character. Also, one of the most unsettling, terrifying, and unforgettable villains ever. I saw this as a kid when it came out, and I couldn't sleep for weeks after. Yikes. That's terrifying.
No, I'm not watching that shit when I'm a kid. It was so scary. I was afraid of Pinocchio. I wouldn't have been able to survive it.
So funny. We also got an email from Justin about Hush. Hello to my favorite podcast host once again. Before I get to the subject of Hush, let me just clear up any confusion. Your first suspicion was correct. I'm actually Canadian, eh? Ha ha! Called it. When I said the Earl Grey tea, I just thought of a tea dimension, and for whatever reason, that was the first one that came into my head. The reason we thought he was Canadian was because he put a U in favorite.
Got it.
And he was very kind in that. That was what led to the conclusion of he's probably Canadian. Anyway, on to the subject of the episode. This episode has no right to be as creepy as it was. Ugh. Never mind what the gentlemen do. They're super creepy just on how they look. Then you add the eerily silent way they float around, their perma-creepy smiles, and it all adds up to a very weird time in Sunnydale. That said, I love how the only noise that people hear is the clinking of the chains attached to the gentleman's rather insane moving pets? Question mark. Oh, I like gosh. To think of those. What were they called again, Todd? The you said. Men. The footmen. I like to think of them as their pets. That's what I kind of got from them.
Did you?
Yeah, because they're just kind of like sidekicks. They're just like, yeah. Woo, you know?
Yeah. Know. Yeah. Ugh.
I love the premise of the episode too, how to be able to steal the hearts, they have to force the entire town into silence, which as you can imagine, leads to some fun events. I rather enjoyed the golf claps the rest of the gentlemen gave the one who presented the latest heart. Oh, and hey, Daddy Giles' orgasm friend is back. Let's hope that he and Xander can have many more orgasms with their own orgasm friends. Thanks, Anya. For now, that will be how I refer to sexual partners.
Yeah, orgasm friends are great.
Speaking of sexual things, I loved the handjob masturbation joke during Giles' presentation about the gentleman. We love a good masturbation joke, don't we? I mean, I love a good masturbation joke.
Yeah.
Finally, in closing, I know it's not much of an introduction, but what do you all think of the new shy witch, Tara? She's my second favorite character in the show, and she must be protected at all costs. That's in all caps. I hope that in your virgin watch through, that you'll come to love her as I do. Sorry, it took me that out. Like, hello. It's hard to have a full opinion on her right now just because she hasn't said a ton. The vibes are good. Is what I would put out there, right?
Yeah. I am just very struck by how like familiar she feels and like in a way that is comforting, right? Like it's comforting to like see a character and like, oh, like that person kind of makes me feel good or comfortable or like calm. And I think that that could be good for the group. And I think that could be good for Willow. I think that if we're thinking of like what kind of like what's like Willow's type, having somebody that is like more cerebral and quiet and like thoughtful, it definitely follows along that path. Like she's definitely like similar in that sense as Oz. So I'm excited to know more. I'm excited to see what kind of, you know, how they can develop their magic together. I'm excited to see if, you know, their coven is going to grow. The aforementioned craft, you need four. So maybe we'll gather more, but like, I'm very excited. I'm very much looking forward to this character.
Yeah. And especially, I feel like that we've heard, I think at least three people say that Tara is their favorite or like one of their favorite characters. So that obviously strikes me as like, well, now I'm really intrigued to see her and I'm sure I'll like her. I don't think I've like vehemently hated characters that like are mostly beloved. I don't think, but we'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, would you like to hear the name of the next episode, Sarah, of Buffy?
Yes.
Season 4, episode 11, Doomed.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Not good at all. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that's good to be doomed. That's a bad thing.
No. And Angel is season 1, episode 11. I have no idea how to pronounce this. Somnambulist.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Somnambulist. What do you mean?
Is that a thing I'm supposed to know?
Yeah.
It's like a sleepwalker.
Sarah, you didn't know that.
Somnambulist.
You're such a bad liar. Your face is just immediately, you have that like, I'm gonna fuck with you face on right now. Like, I'm gonna just fuck with you and act like I knew what the hell that word was.
Somnambulist.
It's not, there's like this word. I've never seen this word in my life. What is it? Say, Todd, how do you pronounce it?
Somnambulist.
Somnambulist.
Okay. Somnambulism is sleepwalking. So a somnambulist is someone who sleepwalks.
Okay, well, someone's sleepwalking, I guess. So that's Angel. And so exciting, next episode will be halfway through Buffy season 4, which means it's time to rank the characters. So we'll be doing that next episode. Can't wait.
Anya has one episode to really, really make me go from her going to the two, from the two spot to the one spot. So let's see what Girly Pop can do in one episode.
See what she could do.
Buffy has yet to be dethroned, I don't think. So we'll see if she can make some magic happen.
We'll see. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. As always, you're a favorite librarian. Giles can be second. The way he ripped those glasses off, Todd. Oh, my God.
Just try to rip the glasses off. Like, let's just try to
But they get caught in my headphones. So they're like stuck.
He has to be in the mood to do it, Sarah. Sorry. You can just put that on someone.
Sorry.
Todd, where else can people listen to you? What else do you got going on you want people to check out?
Well, you can find most of my stuff over at Whirlwind Podcasts, where over on One Indescribable Podcast, we are talking through Everwood. Jess was just a guest for us. That will drop after this, sometime soon. Jess will be on talking about Everwood. Also, Previous Little Liars is just start back up, where we're going through season 3 of Real Liars, but my friends have only watched the previously ons and trying to figure out what's going on with that. Tune in with Todd and Tommy, where Tommy and I talk through cartoons, except right now Tommy's on his honeymoon, so I'm doing some parody songs. I'm talking about a movie watching challenge I'm doing to kind of put a little bit of stuff out there, and we got all sorts of stuff going on at Whirlwind. Veronica Mars, Doctor Who, Smash is about to end, and Zed and Adam are so excited to not have to talk about Smash anymore. They're not excited to not talk to each other, but they're excited to not have to watch Smash. So, yeah, and there's more stuff coming, and Melissa and I will be dropping some coverage of Etoile, the new Amy Sherman Palladino show, sometime pretty soon. So just lots of stuff. Just come over there to Whirlwind and follow all that we're doing.
Perfect. Sarah, anything you would like to plug?
No.
Sarah, did I tell you I started one of those books that I was talking about, I think, on the Felicity podcast?
Which one?
Of course, I didn't start either of the books that I have out from the library. Instead, I started a book that I own. But the good news is I'm like 3/4 of the way through it already.
Oh, so such a fast reader.
Fourth Wing is
what I read. That was the one I told you to read.
Yeah, and I really liked it so much so that I requested the second book from the library, and I picked it up today. So maybe I'll finish this one. I have like, you can see my bookmark.
Yeah. I'm going to read that one because I don't think it's my
style. I don't think it's for you. I will full on say I think in terms of romanticy, I think it leans a lot into the a C, and you wouldn't like that as much as the romance.
Oh, fantasy part. Romantic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm waiting for some books.
It has the library. Dragons. And I love dragons.
I don't want to read about a dragon.
It had a little bit too much of the romance for me personally.
Oh, that's interesting.
Listen, Todd, I'm here with you. Okay. Let me just listen. I'm gonna talk directly.
It's a sex book.
There is sex. And okay, to be fair, I haven't gotten to any sex yet. And I'm this far into the book.
There's no sex. There are like 300.
There's like, but it's one of those things where like the moment that one character is introduced to another character, you're like, they're gonna fuck. Because it's like, I've never seen someone so handsome in my life.
As like, it's like the rippling muscles as he grabbed me, you know. It's yeah. like, you know,
and
how can I be so attracted to this man who like is my family's mortal enemy vibe going on?
Todd, truly, I'm with you. Like, you can miss me with all of that stuff. Like, I read a book that was actual just like romance, and I barely got through it because it was too much for me. Like, too much of the like, oh, look how hunky he is. I couldn't do it. This has dragons. So like, I will tolerate the romance because they got dragons.
Yeah.
Why do you like dragons?
I was.
Because dragons, what do you mean? What's not to like? This is like when people are like, I don't like dinosaurs. Like, truly, like, what's not to, it can fly and it breathes fire and they're magic. Like, I don't understand what else I'm supposed to say.
Okay.
Dragons. Anyway, the only other thing, Todd, okay, I'm gonna, like, this is not a spoiler because it's literally the first couple pages of the book. The only thing that bothers me about these types of books is it's always like, oh, I'm so weak. No one ever could think I'm capable of anything. And it's always like, I'm so petite and oh, I'm so tiny. And it's like, okay, please tell me about how you fit in a matchbox more. Like, stop it.
Well, is she an actual fairy or what?
No, she's a human. She's a human.
She's just sickly.
Oh, she's sick.
No, basically.
She's small. Yeah. She's like small and like not. Like, she has, like, not great joints. Like, she's just a little bit fragile.
What's your name?
Violet.
Basic. Anyway. What a basic bitch.
All the other names are ridiculous, I will say. Give me
another name. Peter?
Zayden. Oh. To be fair, I don't know how to pronounce a lot of these names because, like, I just am guessing.
Do you ever rename characters if you can't pronounce it? It's just like,
I pronounce it however I'm going to pronounce it in my own head, and then just hope that if I ever talk about the book, someone else says the name first.
I just like rename them. Like, okay, this guy's name is now Zach. Like,
yeah, great. There's some that are easy. There's Dane. That's easy. Yes, Zayden is one that's weird. Rhiannon, I actually know as a name. So that one's easy. And
that's a Fleetwood Mac song.
Exactly.
That song is very heavily rumored about witches. So.
Wow.
Doesn't surprise me. That's why Stevie Nicks was on, you know,
American Horror Story. Yeah.
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 The, big witchy vibes there.
I'm a big fan of Fleetwood Mac, actually.
All right. Well, I just needed to give you a book update because, Sarah, I know when I read, I read. You're when I don't literary. Read, I don't pick up a book for months. Yeah. So
waiting for some books from a library, but they're kind of nonfiction. So, which is uncommon for me.
Nonfiction. Yeah. I get bored. Real life is so boring. Like,
we'll
I can't,
see.
You know?
We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Well, good luck. Well, okay. That's everything we have. So until next week, everyone, here endeth the lesson. Just ask. Shit 90 shows taught me.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.